From the studios of Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudet. It has been some 80 years since thousands of Japanese Americans were sent to live in internment camps in places like Minidoka, Idaho. Well, now the National Park Service is developing plans to restore one of those sites. Emma Vandenende of the Mountain West News Bureau reports on the plan in part one of her series, Saving Omachi.
Mitch Homo was cleaning up his grandmother's house in California after she passed away. Tucked away in a closet was something he had never seen before.
We found, I don't know, like 18 boxes full of documents and photos of the family history going back from Japan.
His grandparents and parents didn't talk about their past much, but these boxes contain the answers.
So that's what started the long journey on kind of putting all the pieces of the family history together.
He wanted to know what happened to his family at Omachi. That was one of the 10 main Japanese-American internment camps set up by the U.S. government during World War II. It all started back when President Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed Executive Order 9066. Anyone deemed a threat to national security could be relocated inland. They could bring whatever they could carry, but the rest was taken from them.
Dad remembers sitting on the curb and family heirlooms being thrown in the back of the trunk for the FBI vehicle.
His dad and thousands of other Japanese Americans were first taken to Santa Anita Assembly Center, a horse racing track.
No matter how much his mom, my grandmother, you know, bleached and tried to clean the horse stalls, it still smelled.
They were then transported by train to Omachi. They were put into small rooms that only had a stove, a light bulb, and some cots. Everything they did was shared, from the bathrooms to the mess hall. Homa says it was a complete change of culture.
That was one breakdown of your core traditional family values, right? And all of a sudden, your family dinners are now your family dinner with 100 of your closest friends.
Sanitation at Omachi wasn't the best either. Derek Akubo's relatives were also there and felt the effects.
I remember my grandma, she had mentioned to my cousin just how many times she had to filter the water in order to get it clear so that she could use the baby formula.
Akubo says in moments like those, the parents did their best to be positive around the kids.
There's a fine line between hope and despair on a daily basis. When you think about parents with young children, you know, the parents are trying to be hopeful, even though on the inside they're dying.
Despite these conditions, the survivors made Omachi home. They held art classes to bring life to their barrack walls. They made snowmen in the winter and planted gardens in the summer. But it wasn't easy. They were still living behind barbed wire with armed guards.
I remember hearing comments of, oh, the Japanese were put into the camps to protect them from harm from the outside, which was BS. I mean, if that was the case, I mean, why were the guns pointed in and not out?
When the war ended in 1945, the people were let out of Omachi with $25 and a bus ticket to restart their lives. Akubo's grandparents worked hard despite the pain they endured.
And I remember asking my dad, you know, how did they get that determination? And he said, well, sometimes the best form of revenge is to succeed.
This determination is not just unique to Akubo's family. It was a principle.
Gaman means persevere. That principle, first of all, that allows people to accept it.
That's Carlene Tinker, an Omachi survivor. She says they push through by clinging to their cultural values.
And then there's this other principle also, I believe, of Buddhist of origin, and that's shigata ganai, and that is, it is what it is. You just accept it. It happened. You go forward.
Regardless of principles, Homa knows what the United States did was wrong. Stories like his are the way Americans will never forget.
All governments make mistakes. All ruling kingdoms make mistakes. And it's what you do afterwards, right? Do you bury it? And so that mistake happens over and over and over again? Or do you learn from it?
For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Emma Vandenende.
In part two of our series, Saving Omachi, we hear about efforts to preserve Omachi. This is one of the Japanese-American internment camps here in our region. Emma Vandenende of the Mountain West News Bureau takes us inside the museum in Southeast Colorado.
Does anybody else have a quick question on any of that?
John Hopper is giving a tour of the Omachi Museum to a group of teachers.
Every object in here has a backstory.
And he remembers the details of every single one, including a playing card from an illustrator known for his images of pinups.
There is an Alberto Vargas card in there.
It was given to a gentleman that was in the 7E block, I believe it was. All the women signed it for good luck.
These objects are in a small museum located in the even smaller town of Grenada. During World War II, over 10,000 Japanese Americans were held near here at the Amachi internment camp. He started gathering interviews and items back in the 90s. Now, he has close to 1,400 artifacts that shed light on a piece of local history.
We're right next door, and we're a quarter mile away from Amachi, and I thought, man, this is an ideal situation to do a living history project.
But Hopper doesn't get paid for this. He's a high school history teacher who volunteers along with his students. For the last 30 years, they've brought the Amachi Museum to life, from giving tours to cleaning.
They run this. They open it up, they vacuum, they mop the bathrooms, clean out the trash, keep everything up and running.
He's not the only one working to educate about Amachi. Bonnie Clark is a professor of archaeology at the University of Denver.
We sort of walk back and forth across the surface of the site looking for remains of the things that people did to improve their life in camp.
One big find was remnants of an ofuro. It's like a Japanese hot tub that farm families would use to wash up. The camp only provided showers, so they built their own.
And it's one of the many ways that we've seen where people were, again, trying to sort of reclaim those things that make you feel human.
She excavates the site with her students, but she also allows survivors to join her. Clark says these places and objects are like a time machine that helps survivors connect their stories to the bigger picture of history.
I can take someone by the hand and walk them through the doorway of their family's barrack or where their mother taught school. That sort of passageway to the past is very, very powerful.
Carlene Tinker was one of the survivors who joined the search. She was at Amachi when she was 3 years old. Years later, she made an interesting discovery.
I happened to be on the crew that was on the north side, and we were trying to figure out what was in the ground. I said to myself, you know, this sounds pretty familiar, Block 11F.
It wasn't until Tinker visited the National Archives in Washington, D.C., that this random excavation meant something to her. She saw her report card on display from the preschool in Block 11F.
And guess what? That's how I found out that that was my preschool.
She helped advocate for the building to be reconstructed. Now, it stands on its original footing at the site, along with a water tower, guard tower, and barrack. The work of Clark and Hopper has sustained Amachi for years, and it does not go unnoticed by descendants like Mitch Homa. His dad and several other relatives were in prison there.
Those are the local guys, boots on the ground, that are caring for the sites. And of course, all those groups, you know, Amachi is super fortunate to have a great group of grassroots stakeholders caring for different parts of the site, different projects, large and small.
Clark says all those projects make one thing clear. Experiencing history in physical form is key to understanding Amachi.
That kind of history is the sort of history that we engage with as with our whole bodies and not just with our minds. And I think that's critical for us to be able to, you know, walk in the footsteps of the ancestors.
Amachi will undergo some changes with the National Park Service, but that could take years. In the meantime, the museum will stay open so Hopper can keep telling people about a history that should never be repeated. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Emma Vandenhainde.
Today, we wrap up our series, Saving Amachi. We explain more about the National Park Service's plan to preserve Amachi. It is one of the Japanese-American internment camps that was built here in our region during World War II. Emma Vandenhainde of the Mountain West News Bureau reports.
Gary Ono is at home, leafing through some photos from the camp in eastern Colorado. He was forced to live there as a child.
Yeah, there's us standing out in the field. Our barrack was kind of on the edge of that field, the baseball football field.
And for every photo, he has a story.
I remember when it was snowing, looking out of the window of our barrack and seeing the snowfall.
But as Ono grew up, he learned more about the camp and saw it for what it was, a prison.
You're older and you realize, what the heck is going on? Why are we being treated this way?
Survivors like Ono knew they had to do something to preserve this history, But over the years, fewer and fewer survivors were around to tell their stories. Ono himself is 82. He wants to act before it's too late.
I think it is important to know what we did go through and appreciate maybe what our ancestors, our elders, went through.
Amachi was named a National Historic Landmark in 2006, but survivors wanted to make it a national park. That requires many more boxes to be checked and has to be approved by Congress. Tracy Coppola works with the National Parks Conservation Association, which fought for the legislation. She says the success of Amachi is built on the shoulders of the survivors.
The larger community has really rallied for recognition, for a type of justice that is long overdue, and a place to honor the experience that was had at Amachi.
After survivors and descendants spent years pushing, President Joe Biden signed the Amachi National Park legislation in March. Coppola says that will provide more resources and funding.
We're looking at a request for $505,000 for the Amachi National Historic Site. And hopefully that funding is going to support, you know, the first year of operations and five staff at the newly authorized site.
Survivors already have ideas for restoring the site. Ono wants people to experience firsthand what he had to go through, starting with the lack of privacy in the communal bathrooms.
They just had rolls of holes to go to the bathroom. That has to be awfully embarrassing, yeah, undignified.
He also wants to see a mess hall added to the site. It might seem simple, but Ono says it changed the family dynamics in camp.
The kids would always not want to necessarily eat and stick together with their own family. They would join their friends. But it kind of broke down a normal family structure.
Despite these hopes and dreams, the site still has a long way to go.
The site is not officially established as a unit of the Park Service until we've acquired the land.
That's Kara Miyagishima with the National Park Service. The town of Grenada still owns the land. Surveying and transferring it could take a few years. Miyagishima's goal is to make sure the survivors are an active part of the restoration.
We'll be working really closely with the key stakeholders that are associated with the Machi and also the Japanese American community to help us define and identify what are the most important stories that we want to preserve at Amachi.
Some stakeholders worry about a lack of funding. John Hopper is a local history teacher who has worked for years to preserve Amachi. He says last year the cost of maintenance and remodeling alone was hundreds of thousands of dollars.
But I looked at their proposed budget for next year for that. It's not going to do much. But maybe through the years, they'll get more and more increased funding.
Regardless of what happens with the site, survivors and the Park Service say that upholding this history is the chief goal. Ono agrees.
It's not knowing the truth that causes a lot of misunderstanding. So I think the more everyone can learn about each other, the better.
For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Emma Vandenhinde.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Experiencing the news each day can feel like a journey. With Up First from NPR, it doesn't have to be. Welcome to 15 easy minutes of breaking news, clarity on international and national affairs, all handed over not from some floating voice in the sky, from us, Layla, A, Steve, and me, Rachel. Start your day informed. Subscribe to Up First wherever you get your podcasts.